Rising, From a Mud Hut to the Boardroom and Back Again, written and narrated by Gracie Harkema, with additional content provided by Stephen Coghill, Stephen George, Mari Johnny and Samire Barroco, Jane Harkema, Ray Harkema, Ani Kinja, and Chantel Behendwa. Chapter 1. Divine Timing. Brené Brown says, "Only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness, we will discover the infinite power of our light." The red-colored earth, patched with sticks, straw, and grass, created a 10-foot diameter of the circular mud hut where I took my first breath as I entered this world in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, then called Zaire. I was born on July 3, 1985, in Central Africa, near the border of the Congo and Rwanda, about a decade prior to the peak of the horrific Rwandan genocide, where 1 million men, women, and children were killed based on their tribal identity during the span of 3 months. The area I was born in was a place where violence, riots, war, rebellion, refugees, sex trafficking, abuse, and extreme poverty ran rampant. My biological mother, Mari Johnny, was extremely impoverished, living in a mud hut, and didn't have anything except for prayers for her next breath. She had grieved the loss of many family members who died from disease and malnutrition. Mari Johnny was not involved with my biological father. In fact, he was unknown to her. She was young when she unexpectedly got pregnant with me. It is common in Bukavu for men to overpower young women. Women and young girls are treated as second-class citizens, and they are expected to carry children and serve men's needs, no matter what. My less than 4 pounds frail body was prematurely delivered in the darkness of the mud hut from Mari Johnny's weak, thin, malnourished frame. From the moment I took my first breath, Mari Johnny was also fighting for hers. She was stricken with a fatal protein deficiency disease. Both Mari Johnny and I had a slim chance of survival. I was fighting oral thrush, which was inhibiting me from being able to suck, swallow, and digest anything for the first several weeks of my life. My body would later learn to fight more illnesses, including malaria and hepatitis. Mari Johnny's dire condition made it impossible for her to care for me. At 1 week old, the only chance I had at survival was from the torturous and selfless decision she made to hand me over to her mother to find care for me. Desperate for help, my biological grandmother went from neighbor to neighbor across the village, seeking aid and support to make sure I lived. A neighbor heard of an orphanage down the mountain, and the folks there could potentially give my biological grandmother food, since she was also weak from malnutrition. My biological grandmother walked several hours through the bush and through the mountainous terrain above Lake Kivu. There I was, 1 week old, frail and nameless. There she was, hoping I would survive as she brought me to the orphanage in the village of Kididobo in the Wolongo territory for a chance of care. Illness was very prevalent in newborns. No newborn had survived the cold of the high elevation, and most died within 24 hours. When we arrived at the orphanage, the concerned caring orphanage workers did not want me near the other children, as they were fearful I would catch something from them and die. They placed me in their home next door to the orphanage, in a bedroom near the bathroom, in a toy baby doll bassinet that belonged to one of the daughters of the missionary couple who ran the orphanage. A couple of hours after I arrived to the orphanage, an American couple named Ray and Jane Harkema and their 4 children, ages 7 to 15, traveled a few hours from their home in Bukavu, Congo, to visit the family who ran the orphanage. As a young immigrant boy from the Netherlands, Ray was curious and inquisitive about the world. He moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan in his early years. With excitement, he would read through his elementary school library's National Geographic magazines, interested in learning about Africa. He wasn't sure exactly what he loved about Africa. All that he knew was that he couldn't get enough. Jane grew up a natural nurturer. She spent her childhood babysitting for a woman down the street who was fostering a black baby. Jane loved caring for that baby. Jane later went to cosmetology school in Grand Rapids in the 1960s during the civil rights era. One day, the vibrant, gregarious, blonde-haired 19-year-old was sitting at the back of the city bus
Sample complete. Ready to continue?